Afternoon. Welcome to this news conference, which will feature experts from around the United States from four organizations: the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, Austin-based Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, the SEED Coalition, Friends of the Earth in South Carolina, and also the Nuclear Information and Resource Service in Maryland. Four representatives of the four organizations will be providing their views today on the nuclear loan guarantees that are currently under review, the four major candidates, as well as what the review of the four major candidates means for the Obama administration's proposed tripling of nuclear loan guarantee bailout funds. You'll be hearing again from four speakers today. They'll be introduced as a group and then individually as they deliver their remarks, but what we'd like to do at this time first is go to the operator to have the operator explain how it is that you'll be able to participate as a member of the news media during the Q&A period.
During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star then two. Again, it's star then one to ask a question.
And we'll have the operator back on the line at the start of the Q&A period so that you can hear once again how it is that you'll be able to pose your question when the Q&A period begins. And again, I want to emphasize that the Q&A period is reserved for members of the news media. A news release that summarizes the points that will be made by our speakers today may be found on the web at the website for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and that is at www.cleanenergy.org. Again, that's www.cleanenergy.org, and we'll be repeating that information when we get into the Q&A period. Our four speakers today will be as follows. I'm going to introduce them now as a group and then individually as they deliver their remarks. You'll be hearing first of all today from Sarah Barzak, who is Program Director with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. She will be addressing the proposed Vogtle reactors in Georgia. Our second speaker will be Karen Haddon, who is Executive Director of the Austin-based Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, the SEED Coalition. She'll be addressing the NRG reactor project in Texas. Our third speaker today will be Tom Clements, Friends of the Earth, who will be speaking about the VC summer reactors in South Carolina. And our fourth and final speaker today before the Q&A period begins will be Michael Marriott, who is Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and he'll be speaking about the Calvert Cliffs reactor project in Maryland. Again, our first speaker today, Sarah Barzak, Program Director with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Barzak. I am the High Risk Energy Choices Program Director with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I'm pleased to be joined today for this news conference by Karen Haddon, Executive Director of the Austin-based SEED Coalition, the Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, Tom Clements with Friends of the Earth in South Carolina, and Michael Marriott, Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service in Maryland. As local experts from around the U.S., we are here today to warn that no good candidates exist for current nuclear reactor loan guarantee bailout funds, much less the triple amount that is proposed under the Obama budget plan. In fact, we see huge risks of delays, cost overruns, and defaults, leaving U.S. taxpayers on the hook. And this is all following on the heels of January, one of the worst months ever for the nuclear industry. Today, our four organizations are joining together in the hopes of better informing the debate in Washington on nuclear loan guarantee bailouts that seems to be divorced from the unpleasant reality that we are seeing here down on the ground. Together, we are asking the question, what if the federal government held a beauty contest for taxpayer-backed nuclear reactor loan guarantee bailouts and no reactor project beauties could be lined up for the runway? Because that is precisely the situation the U.S. Department of Energy faces today with the extraordinarily weak crop of four reactor projects candidates vying for such loan guarantee bailouts. The four projects up for the existing $18.5 billion in federal bailout support are Southern Company's Vogtle reactors in Georgia, which are widely believed to be the current front runner, the NRG reactor project in San Antonio, currently embroiled in litigation, the VC summer reactors in South Carolina, and the proposed Calvert Cliffs reactor in Maryland. I want to be clear that it's not just our group saying that these are four genuinely ugly candidates for taxpayer-backed loan guarantees. According to the Independent Taxpayers for Common Sense, none of the four top-tier project proposals for the existing loan guarantee program inspire confidence. All exhibit some combination of rising cost estimates, delays related to reactor designs, and credit downgrades, according to that taxpayer watchdog group. And here's what makes matters even worse. The four deeply flawed reactor projects are reputed to be the best of the best options available, which means that there are no viable candidates in the pipeline to justify the tripling to $54 billion in nuclear reactor bailouts proposed under the White House budget released this week. As I mentioned, this is the latest bad news for the setback-plagued nuclear power industry, which is coming off one of its worst months ever in January 2010, including a major courtroom squabble between NRG and the city of San Antonio over a $4 to $5 billion estimated cost increase for two new reactors in Texas. In January, we also saw the rejection of $1 billion in rate increases by Florida regulators that has caused the two state utilities to announce a potential slowdown on their nuclear projects, and a growing scandal in Vermont over carcinogenic tritium leaks into the water supply that threatens to derail state approval of the extension of the Vermont Yankee reactor site. We just don't understand how this seriously troubled industry is being viewed by some in Washington as such an ideal candidate for taxpayer-backed loan guarantee bailouts. The current $18.5 billion is bad enough, and the proposed $54 billion boost makes no sense to us whatsoever. Each of the four speakers today will be talking about the reactor project in their backyard. With that, I will focus now on the proposed Vogtle reactors in Georgia. It is difficult to fathom how the Vogtle project, which was the poster child for cost overruns in the original nuclear boom and bust in the United States, could be the front runner for taxpayer-backed loan guarantee bailouts. Vogtle's proposed Westinghouse AP1000 reactor design is not even approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as safe from hurricanes, tornadoes, and earthquakes. In fact, even if Vogtle got the loan guarantee go-ahead tomorrow, it could still face years of costly delays in order to make its reactor design safer or to gain license approval. This situation puts taxpayers squarely behind the eight ball in terms of increased risk from the very outset. When it comes to Vogtle, the bottom line here is that extremely powerful and financially savvy utilities, such as the Southern Company, have already found a way at the state level to shift the risk to those who can least afford to pay for costly new reactors, and now they're hoping for even more handouts, this time at the expense of the U.S. taxpayer. And we would like to know how much more burden can be piled onto the shoulders of hardworking families and small businesses in Georgia. That concludes my opening statement. I look forward to answering your questions about Vogtle and the situation with the taxpayer-backed nuclear loan guarantee bailout program in general. Thanks for your attention.
That was the opening comment of Sarah Barzak, who is Program Director of the High Risk Program of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. We'll now proceed to our second of four speakers, Karen Haddon, who is Executive Director of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Development, the SEED Coalition, in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Karen Haddon. And our organization is involved in helping communities organize in their opposition to nuclear reactors in Texas, and we are also heading up legal opposition to both Comanche Peak and South Texas Project reactors. And there are two reactors proposed for each of these sites. The South Texas Project is a perfect example of how the desire for loan guarantees is really the only thing propping up reactors that otherwise might not get built. Even with the loan guarantees, the San Antonio City Council has now signaled to CPS Energy, the municipal utility, that ratepayers cannot afford the increasingly expensive energy from the two proposed reactors. Their partner, NRG, says they won't proceed without loan guarantees. And we feel that sinking billions of taxpayer dollars into such a risky project would make no sense at all. The fact that NRG's South Texas project has been among the leading candidates for loan guarantees shows how flawed the selection process is. This project may very well be doomed at this point, given the enormous recent cost increase of $4 billion that was kept secret from the San Antonio City Council and the public. Now there is resulting legal wrangling between the utilities proposing to build the reactors, and the cost has gone up another $1 billion. Already we see the all-too-familiar pattern of cost overruns, delay, and legal battles, and this is before a license has been issued or a shovel has been turned. Cost projections for the South Texas Project reactors have more than tripled, going from $5.4 billion to the latest estimate of $18.2 billion. These reactors are likely to be canceled due to high costs, lowered electric demand, strong local ratepayer opposition, and legal opposition to licensing. Although the reactor was supposed to be standardized and pre-approved, over 40 changes to the design have been requested. And there really is no good reason to be building reactors at this time in Texas. We have a grid that is called ERCOT, serving 85% of the state, and the power cannot be sold to other parts of the country. Recently, CPS Energy's own demand projections for the year 2020 dropped 20%, which is 1,300 megawatts. This is more than they would get from the nuclear project. Texas as a whole is using less energy. As wind energy comes on, energy efficiency measures are taking effect, and better building codes are also having an impact. We simply don't need nuclear power. The South Texas project application was the first in the nation when it was submitted in 2007 in nearly 30 years. The partners are New Jersey-based NRG and the San Antonio Municipal Utility CPS Energy that are now 50-50% partners in the project. Toshiba joined in with NRG, and they created an entity known as NINA, Nuclear Innovation North America, with Toshiba 12% on that end. They were seen as the front runners for the loan guarantees, and we feel that their license application may have been rushed in order to do that. Their application is shoddy. It was so incomplete that there was a year of delay. The NRC refused to review it any longer because it was so full of holes. All along, NRG has continued to say they wouldn't build the reactors without federal loan guarantees. We feel that they were rushing to get in on them. In Texas, the Public Utility Commission has little oversight of the municipal utilities, and the San Antonio City Council is at the helm with CPS Energy. Citizen pressure forced that city council to reduce a rate hike that the utility requested and to take out nuclear back in May 2008. Citizens had to come up with their own expert analysis and cost projections because CPS Energy wouldn't do it. And Dr. Arjun Makajani found that costs could go up to $17.5 billion. Still, CPS Energy refused to give any public estimate. Eventually, last year, they came out with an estimate of $13 billion, and they held 11 meetings all last summer in which they were giving that figure out to the public, $13 billion. Well, it turned out in October, just days before an additional $400 million was about to be voted on by City Council, that the cost of the project was actually $4 billion more than the public had been told. And the CPS Energy staff had not informed their own board or the mayor or the city council. There was a huge backlash. The vote on the nuclear funding was postponed, and the news got even worse when it was learned that the higher cost had been known for at least a year, and during all those public meetings, CPS was misleading the public. In the end, two top executives have been removed, and the CPS chair has been asked to resign and has done so. And city council support for the nuclear reactors has dropped. Now we have the two partners in the project in court. They've had the first of their court hearings, and a judge determined that either party is able to withdraw from the project. The situation now is like a divorce case, where the question is how to deal with common property, and round two will be coming up. Certainly, this is not a project that was solid enough to move forward with loan guarantees and is a good example of how loan guarantees were the driving force in a project that was not solid.
That was the opening statement of our second speaker, Karen Haddon, who is Executive Director of the Austin-based Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, the SEED Coalition. We're now going to proceed to Tom Clements with Friends of the Earth in South Carolina. Tom?
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Clements. I'm with the International Environmental Organization Friends of the Earth, and I'm based in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm monitoring the South Carolina Electric and Gas proposal to build two Westinghouse AP1000 reactors. I want to emphasize three things: cost, schedule, and regulatory uncertainties. This is a deadly combination which puts this project on shaky ground and taxpayers and ratepayers at risk. The company's application before the South Carolina Public Service Commission in May 2008 was challenged by Friends of the Earth. During the hearing in December 2008, we were unable to pin down SCE&G on the ultimate cost of electricity from the project, leading to our claim that the PSC had issued the company a blank check when the project was approved in February 2009. In the hearing before the PSC, SCE&G was forced to reveal a cost estimate of $6.3 billion in gross construction for its 55% share of the project, or a total cost of about $11.5 billion. This deviates significantly from the cost projection of the other AP1000 project on the loan guarantee shortlist, the Vogtle project. In August 2008, in an SEC filing, the company had said that the total cost was $9.8 billion, with SCE&G share about $5.4 billion. Thus, in a matter of months, the cost increased well over $1 billion. It's worth noting that a DOE estimate in October 2008 of $9 billion per unit, and just this past Monday, NRC Commissioner Jasko is quoted in an article in the Arizona Republic saying that, quote, the best estimate for a new reactor's price tag is about $10 billion. In reports filed with the PSC for the first two quarters of 2009, SCE&G stated that the construction cost had gone up around $550 million due to cost escalation, but in the third quarter claims this increase was erased. Thus, it appears that SCE&G cost estimates are low, are trending upwards, but that they're also very unreliable. In July, Moody's lowered the bond rating of SCANA, SCE&G's parent company, citing risk for a company of SCANA's size. With a market capitalization value of only about $5 billion, SCE&G is playing a dangerous bet the company hand at the cost, as the cost of the project exceeds the value of the company. Friends of the Earth has appealed the Public Service Commission decision directly to the South Carolina Supreme Court due to inadequate consideration of cost and energy alternatives, and is also challenging the unjust South Carolina law, which forces customers to pay in advance for the reactors. A hearing on our appeal is likely in March, and I would add that the South Carolina Energy Users Committee, representing large industrial users, has also appealed to the South Carolina Supreme Court. In a November 2009 hearing in which SCE&G requested and received adjustments in cost and scheduling, the Public Service Commission made clear that the 18-month delay period that it had granted in the initial approval of the project could be reset every time SCE&G sought a schedule adjustment, thus indicating that further delays might simply be regulated away by the Public Service Commission. And SCE&G did admit to the PSC that the NRC licensing schedule had fallen behind the company's schedule and that this could delay and have further cost impacts. The status of the AP1000 reactor review before the NRC is problematic. The review is on hold due to problems with the design of the shield building, the large concrete building over the reactor containment. Westinghouse is redesigning the fall shield building, but there is currently no established NRC review schedule, and it remains unclear if the reactor design can be certified. Westinghouse was going to deliver a revised plan in January to the NRC, but now that has already slipped to February, as Westinghouse stated on a conference call last week. Thus, the key milestones for the new reactor review, for the reactor review on the NRC website, have a big T by the posted dates, meaning target, but more accurately, they're tentative. This affirms that the review schedule for the reactor is up in the air. In conclusion, due to cost uncertainties and schedule delays, as well as unknowns related to the NRC's review schedule and the South Carolina Supreme Court appeal, the South Carolina Electric and Gas Nuclear Project wins no beauty contest and is a poor bet for taxpayer underwriting via a loan guarantee. Thank you, and that concludes my comments.
That was the opening statement of Tom Clements, our third speaker. Tom Clements is with Friends of the Earth in South Carolina. And that takes us to our fourth of four speakers, Michael Marriott, Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. And Michael joins us today from Maryland.
Thank you, Scott. Yes, this is Michael Marriott from Nuclear Information and Resource Service. We're a national organization based in Maryland and have a special interest in the Calvert Cliffs nuclear plant, where we are interveners in the licensing process. And it's the proposal is would be built less than 50 miles from our office. The Calvert Cliffs reactor would use in a design by the French firm Areva. It's called the EPR. It is the largest reactor ever proposed for the U.S., and it's the most expensive reactor ever proposed for the U.S. In March of 2009, Mayo Shattuck, he's the CEO of Constellation Energy, which is one of the partners in this project, he admitted in testimony before the Maryland Public Service Commission that Calvert Cliffs 3 would cost about $10 billion, not including financing and other costs. However, another utility, PPL, in Pennsylvania, has the thought of building an identical plant to Calvert Cliffs 3, and on their website, they have a project estimate for the same plant, counting those other costs, and their estimate is $13 to $15 billion for a single reactor. Now, this is a large reactor, but it is not twice the size of other reactors. It's about one and a third the size of other reactors. So, you know, this works out to about $9,000 a kilowatt, which is would be the most expensive large-scale power project we've ever heard of. there are questions as to whether this particular facility can be licensed. I mentioned we are interveners in the license application. An Atomic Safety and Licensing Board, which is a three-judge panel, has been set up by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to hear some issues, and one of the issues is the unprecedented level of foreign involvement in this project. This gets a little complicated, but I'm going to try to explain it and happy to take questions on it. To begin with, it's important to know that the Atomic Energy Act flatly prohibits foreign ownership, control, or domination, and that's a quote, of a nuclear power project in the U.S. This project is being pursued by a company called Unistar Nuclear, and that's a 50-50 project of Constellation Energy and Électricité de France. But Électricité de France is also the largest single shareholder of Constellation Energy. It owns about 9% of the company. And recently, it bought for $4.5 billion 49.9% of Constellation's five existing reactors. That was a deal that was made to try to keep Warren Buffett from buying Constellation Energy. Most of the construction money would go to Areva. Both Électricité de France and Areva are 85% owned by the French government. And Unistar is hoping to complement loan guarantee money from the Department of Energy with financing from the French government's Export-Import Bank. So, you know, we have a situation where foreign companies, and in this case a foreign government, have an enormous say over this project, and we would submit it does constitute ownership, control, and domination. Unistar, for its part, tried to get this issue thrown out of hearings, but the NRC commissioners already have ruled against them, and they've ordered that these hearings be held, and that will happen either later this year or next year. But that's just a licensing issue. Even if they get their license at some point, there are other problems with this plant. For one, the existing construction history of the EPR is one of magnificent failure. Areva is building one of these reactors in Finland. Construction on that reactor began in 2005. The target completion date was May of this past year, May 2009. They didn't make that date. They're not going to finish this May. They're not going to finish next May. In fact, they're at this point more than 3.5 years behind schedule and more than 75% over budget. A second EPR is being built by Unistar partner EDF, Électricité de France, in France. It's only been under construction for about 2 years, just over 2 years, and it's already 20% over budget. Although, interestingly, for those who believe in the French nuclear program, it's actually not a very transparent program. It's very difficult to get information out of France, especially specifics about what these budget overruns are due to. Now, another issue for this project is that Calvert Cliffs 3 would operate in a completely deregulated environment. It's a merchant plant. The Maryland Public Service Commission has no jurisdiction over the economics of the plant, over the sales of electricity from the plant. And, in fact, there are no guaranteed electricity sales from this project. And it's not at all clear who might buy electricity from a reactor that's going to cost on the order of $10 to $15 billion even before likely cost overruns. Electricity demand has fallen over the past 2 years in the PJM transmission area. That's the area that serves the mid-Atlantic states. And that's been true. Falling electricity demand is true across the country over the past 2 years. Now, some of that is due to the recession, of course, but some of that is due to energy efficiency programs kicking in across the country. Maryland has a fairly aggressive energy efficiency program, and it has a renewable energy portfolio standard. And if both of those, the targets of both of those are met over the next 10 years, you'll have a situation of reduced electricity demand in the region and increased renewable energy capability in the region, more capacity. So that squeezes this project in both ways, both directions, and likely will make it even harder for this project to sell any power. Blue Water Wind is a company that actually was recently purchased by NRG, and they are already planning to build large-scale wind farms off the Delaware coast. They've gotten permission to do that. And the states of Maryland and Virginia have indicated they're going to give permission for large-scale construction of wind farms, too. So it's very unclear how this project could ever generate funds to repay the loan guarantees that it may receive and that it is expecting to receive. So I think what we're doing here is pointing out that all of these reactor projects, there are red flags all over the place. There are warning signs that none of these projects are particularly attractive for investment. They're not attractive to private investors without loan guarantees, certainly, and they shouldn't be attractive to use of taxpayer money. And now I'll turn it back over to Scott.
And that was the comment made, opening statement made by our fourth and final speaker before the Q&A period begins, Michael Marriott, Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and he was addressing the proposed Calvert Cliffs Reactor Project in Maryland. We're now going to proceed to the Q&A period. As we do, I want to make sure that you know that a news release that sets out the points that you've heard outlined today by our four speakers is available to you on the website for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. That's at cleanenergy.org, www.cleanenergy.org. You also can find the news release on PR Newswire at this time. As we move into the Q&A period, we want to invite the operator back on the line to explain how the Q&A period will work. We want to indicate again to you that the Q&A period is reserved for members of the news media. So, operator, let's begin.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star, then 1 to rejoin the queue.
And while we're waiting for our first question, I also want to address a point that was raised by a couple of callers before the news event began, and that is the streaming audio replay of this news event. That will be available to you on the podcast page, which is accessible from at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy at www.cleanenergy.org. Again, that's cleanenergy, www.thehighrisk.org. We do have one question that was just submitted to us by a reporter who heard the opening statements and has had to leave before the Q&A period begins. And so I'm simply going to read the question that was provided to you. Oh, I understand we do have one questioner who is in the queue, so I'll get back to that question that was sent to us by email. Operator, let's proceed with our first question.
Our first question comes from Bill Freebairn from Platts. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Yes, in reference to what Sarah and Tom were saying about regulatory risk, it was my understanding that the guarantees wouldn't actually close until NRC has approved a combined operating license. Is it your understanding that's something different than that, or what would be the regulatory risk, you think, for taxpayers?
This is Sarah Barzak. Well, I think you have to look at the fact that making federal nuclear reactor loan guarantees conditional upon a U.S. NRC construction license won't protect the U.S. taxpayer for the simple reason that the industry has a track record of defaulting on loans in the post-licensing
right.
period due to construction problems, cost overruns, delays, and other factors that DOE, the Department of Energy, can't possibly foresee today and which are in no way eliminated by licensing or receiving a construction operating license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
So it's more financial risk that you're concerned on, that they will default down the road at some point.
Yes, definitely.
All right, thank you.
No follow-up question there? I understand. If not, we have another question in the queue, operator. Let's proceed.
Our next question comes from Wayne Barber from SNL Power Daily. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask the panel what form of baseload power they would advocate for the future, or if they think any additional baseload power will be needed, and if they have any position on the Obama administration's plans to curtail Yucca Mountain. In planning toward Yucca Mountain?
Well, this is Michael Marriott from NERS. Baseload power, there's a couple things about that. First of all, it is not the immediate need in this country. The immediate need is, in some regions, peak power. It's not baseload power. Over the long term, of course, baseload power is important, particularly if we're going to close dirty coal plants and leaking nuclear plants. But it's a misconception that only large-scale fossil fuel and nuclear plants can provide baseload power. For example, Spain has solar thermal power plants under construction now that operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because they do have some amount of storage available. And these are being built for an average of $5,200 per kilowatt, or about 60% of the cost of the proposed Calvert Cliffs nuclear plant. Wind, solar, geothermal, all of the renewables, when you couple them with smart grids and intelligent planning, it can serve as the equivalent of baseload power, which means providing electricity when it is needed. The wind is not always blowing in any given location. It is always blowing somewhere. And so what you need to be able to do is switch back and forth from those sources that are providing the electricity at the time you need it. That's what smart grids do. That's what distributed generation technologies do. So, you know, we need to rethink this whole concept that you need these, you know, mega-sized power plants that pollute the environment to provide our electricity. You know, when a nuclear plant goes down, a plant like Calvert Cliffs, even if it runs at 90% capacity, that means at least a month out of the year it's not running. You need backup for it. And these other types of technologies, you know, when you lose a 50-megawatt facility because a wind farm, because the wind stops running, well, you know, that's not as big a deal to make up. It can be done, and we need new ways of thinking about how to provide our power. It works in Europe, and it can work here.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Karen.
This is Karen Haddon, and in Texas, we actually had one of our contentions accepted in our legal proceedings about this issue. And we are very clear that we can do baseload by combining wind comes in at night in West Texas and solar coming in on peak, which is our major concern, and that you can combine those with energy storage, like compressed air energy storage. And you can firm all that up with natural gas. Those do work. They are working. In fact, we've had now up to 25% of our electricity coming from wind. That was a high that we hit recently. On a smaller scale, we can do geothermal, which is base load. So there are lots of options for generating electricity that are more affordable, and energy efficiency being, of course, the first approach.
This is Sarah Barzak with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. In regard to your question, our organization is based in the southeastern United States, which has been behind the eight ball in terms of developing renewable energy technologies, and also most of the utilities have woefully inadequate energy efficiency and conservation programs. We had issued a report last year called Yes, We Can, Southern Solutions for a National Renewable Energy Standard. In that, you can see the studies that we put forward on how we could, in the individual states and in the Southeast as a region, sort of switch this base load idea over from predominantly coal and nuclear to what we see as a far more affordable and less risky global warming solution in terms of the energy sector. I also want to just point out in the case of Plant Vogtle and Georgia Power, that's the subsidiary of Southern Company that's pursuing the new Vogtle reactors, they have been, and this happened in Florida as well, with the utilities Florida Power and Light and Progress Energy of Florida. Georgia Power continues to use outdated economic assumptions. Some of them are more than 2 years old prior to the recession and prior to the dramatic drop in natural gas prices to justify proceeding with the Vogtle project. And this is occurring despite PSC orders, Public Service Commission orders, requiring them to update such economics for their semi-annual reports on the Vogtle project. So I think when you bring up the question of baseload, you also have to bear in mind that in many cases, the utilities that are pursuing these new reactor projects are not acknowledging the serious change in the electricity forecast, the demand needs in their regions in order to continue justifying the need for these projects. Your second question dealt with Yucca Mountain, and I will defer to other speakers. I will say that because Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is based in the Southeast, and there have been, efforts over the years to have reprocessing occur at different sites in the Southeast, particularly the Savannah River site. We are concerned with the makeup of the Blue Ribbon panel. We look forward to what comes of it, but we kind of are in the feeling of you're putting the cart before the horse. If you've basically identified that we have a nuclear waste crisis in the country, but at the same time the administration is then saying, well, let's throw even more money, $54 billion now, at this industry to help boost it up. I mean, this industry produces nuclear waste. All of these new reactors that we're talking about today are going to produce nuclear waste. And as far as I'm aware of, that new Blue Ribbon panel is not going to have recommendations out for 18 to 24 months, and we're dealing on the ground today with new reactor proposals. So, you know, again, we think that the waste problem should be dealt with first and foremost before we're, you know, running down the ramp, throwing billions of dollars at new reactor projects that we're very convinced are going to default.
Was there a follow-up question there?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Operator, I understand we have no additional questions in the queue at this time. I know we have a number of reporters on the line who have indicated they want to take the questions offline after the news event is over, but we have others who have not yet expressed a preference in terms of when they'll have their questions responded to. So let's go through the instructions one more time about how it is that reporters can pose their questions now at this time if they choose to do so.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, you can press star then two. Again, it's star then one to ask a question.
And we will have the operator on the line again as necessary during the Q&A period to explain how it is that you can pose your questions. In the meantime, while we're waiting for our next question, I do want to make sure that you know where you can get information after the news event is over. You can do so by going to the website for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy at cleanenergy.org. That's where you'll find the news release that sets out the concerns that have been articulated by the four speakers today. That's also where you'll find a streaming audio replay of this news event. That'll be available to you later on today, as of about 5 or 6 p.m. today. It'll be available to you on the website for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. While we're waiting for an additional question, I do want to make sure that you also know that after the news event is over, you can contact any of the speakers that you've heard from today by calling Leslie Anderson at 703-276-3256. Again, that's Leslie Anderson at 703-276-3256. She can put you in touch with the speakers after this news event is over. She can also get you a copy of the news release that sets out the various concerns of the speakers. She also can make sure that you have direct access, if necessary, to the streaming audio file that will be available after the event. While we're waiting for additional questions, and we do want to encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to interact directly with the experts that we've gathered together for you today, I do want to pose the question that was submitted to us by the reporter who jumped off after the opening statements, who was unable to participate in the Q&A period. And the question that that speaker asked is this: are these the only four projects that are currently up for consideration? Do you have any views about the other projects? And how concerned should taxpayers, if at all, be about the tritium issue associated with Vermont Yankee? So I guess that's actually two questions, my mistake.
Well, this is Michael Marriott from Nuclear Information and Resource Service. There are a number of other pending applications and or partial applications before the Department of Energy for loan guarantees. We are focused on these four today because these four are have been widely reported as being on the Department of Energy's quote-unquote short list, and these are reputed to be the best of the applications. And I think one of our major points today is that, you know, if these are the best, we'd hate to see the worst because, you know, these are pretty darn bad. So, yes, while there's some other projects out there, in terms of a beauty contest, they're not finalists, as we've been putting it. In terms of the tritium releases, this is a growing problem across the country. There have now been tritium releases of radioactive tritium found at 27 reactor sites across the country. Vermont is the one of the most recent ones, and it's also one of the largest ones in terms of how far above Environmental Protection Agency standards that the releases are. They're some 4 to 5 times higher than the maximum permitted by law. So these are very significant releases. I mean, radioactive tritium is a, you know, it's a highly toxic, carcinogenic isotope, and it's not something you want in your water. It's not something, which is where you normally find it, but it's not something you want in your groundwater. It's not something you want in your ground. I don't know how many people here have ever been to the Vermont Yankee plant, but I have. I've spent quite a bit of time there, and it's surrounded by farms. And you know, if this tritium gets into the into the, you know, arable area, you're going to have, you know, plants, you know, sucking this tritium up. So it's a very serious issue at Vermont Yankee, but it's not just Vermont Yankee. There have been tritium reports across Illinois. The most recent one I know of was at the Sharon Harris nuclear plant near Raleigh, North Carolina. And there's a lot of suspicion. Actually, I should mention, by the way, there has been tritium leaks found at the Calvert Cliffs 1 and 2 reactors. with some potential for off-site contamination, which is something that really hasn't been dealt with either by the utility or by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, particularly in terms of the Calvert Cliffs 3 proposal. Anyway, so these are very serious issues, and they may well exist at more reactor sites than have been identified so far.
This is Tom Clements with Friends of the Earth in South Carolina. Let me just add a little bit about the list of the companies on the top of the loan guarantee list. In spite of our request to the Department of Energy about the companies on the list and who has applied and access to information about how decisions are being made on who would be offered a loan guarantee, we have received virtually no information from the department. I filed a Freedom of Information Act request on November 1st, basically trying to find out who was on the list, the top of the list in particular, and what the procedures were for determining who would get a loan guarantee offer. I have received no response whatsoever. A group in Texas had also filed a similar response earlier last year, and they got virtually no response. So in spite of Attorney General Holder's directives for more openness and transparency, and some of those have been issued by Secretary Chu himself, the Loan Guarantee Office of the Department of Energy has been quite closed off from public scrutiny, and we think that this really needs to change because they're dealing with so much money that the taxpayers would be putting up for these nuclear projects.
Operator, do we have additional questions at this time?
We show no questions at this time, sir.
Okay. Given that we are past the 45-minute mark, coming up on 50 minutes, and since we've gone through the questions that are in the queue, and we have additional reporters who have indicated that they want to pose their question after the event is over, and we'll explain once again how to facilitate that, just wanted to take an opportunity now to run through our four speakers and give them a chance to offer any closing thoughts that they'd like to leave you with as we wrap things up. So we'll go first of all to Sarah Barzak with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Well, as I said earlier in my comments, it is not just these four groups on the call today that are questioning these taxpayer-backed loan guarantees. The Taxpayers for Common Sense organization, a watchdog taxpayer group, is concerned, as we are, because all of these projects, and again, these are supposedly the best of the best that the Department of Energy could find, they are all experiencing some combination of rising cost estimates, delays related to the reactor designs, and credit downgrades. In we just can't understand how this seriously troubled industry is being viewed by some in Washington as such an ideal candidate for taxpayer-backed loan guarantee bailouts. And in Vogtle's case, we want to reiterate that even because they are considered widely as the front runner for getting these, even if that is decided tomorrow, let's say, that project still faces years of costly delays likely in order to make the reactor design safe, the AP1000, or to gain the actual license approval that they need from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So once again, taxpayers and the ratepayers, those families and small businesses in Georgia are going to be burdened even more than they already are for some risky ventures that some savvy electric utilities are pursuing that are very likely to default. Thank you.
And again, that was the closing thought for today from the person who was our first speaker, Sarah Barzak, a high-risk program director, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. We'll now proceed to the person who is the second speaker, Karen Haddon, executive director of the Austin-based Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, the SEED Coalition.
Hi, again, this is Karen Haddon. Well, the South Texas project was at one time supposed to be first in line for these federal loan guarantees, and they've slipped. And it appears that their rush to get in line and to get that federal funding may have been part of the picture that we see now of where things are collapsing. They didn't think it through. They didn't have their funding solid. They didn't have their cost estimates right. And now both NRG and CPS Energy have sunk about $400 million each and have a project that may not work. We are followed in this reactor project by the Comanche Peak project up in the Fort Worth area. That one is for a reactor design that has not yet been licensed, even though the license application is moving forward. And it is a reactor design that has never been built anywhere in the world. So we see further risks there. The history in Texas is one of cost overruns and delays, 6 times over budget and 8 years late for the South Texas project. We don't want to see this kind of energy approach anymore in our state.
That was the closing thought for today from our second of four speakers, Karen Haddon, Executive Director of the Austin-based Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Seed Coalition. At this time, let's proceed to Tom Clements with Friends of the Earth in South Carolina.
This is Tom in South Carolina. And I think the bottom line for us is that if nuclear power is a mature industry, then it should compete without a bailout. We believe that a nuclear bailout harms the country's pursuit of energy efficiency, conservation, and clean alternative energy, and that no loan guarantee should be issued to these risky nuclear projects. Nor should Congress respond to President Obama's request for new loan guarantees nuclear industry.
Okay, that was the closing thought for today from our third of four speakers, Tom Clements, Friends of the Earth in South Carolina, and that takes us to Michael Marriott, Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service.
Hi, this is Michael Marriott. I'd like to point out once again that what we're doing here today is raising red flags, raising the alarm that these projects are less than they may seem. And I want to point out that on this concept of conditional loan guarantees, you know, the DOE may be conditioning these guarantees on these reactors projects receiving a license from the NRC, and perhaps some of these projects or some other ones eventually will receive a license. That isn't clear. But the guarantees are not conditioned on meeting cost estimates or good management, that type of thing. And this is important when one remembers that according to the Department of Energy itself, the first 75 reactors built in the United States experienced an average 207% cost overrun during the actual construction of the plant. Now, that wasn't quite as big a deal when initial estimates were $1 billion and went to $3 billion, but when we're starting off at around $10 billion, you know, even if the utility is twice as good as they used to be, and there's only 100% overrun, well, then you're looking at a $20 billion cost of a plant. Now, who's going to make up that difference? Where is this extra money going to come from? Are these utilities going to be coming back for more loan guarantees, or are they just going to abandon their projects? This is, you know, potentially a very serious issue.
Again, that was the closing thought for today from our fourth of four speakers, Michael Marriott, Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. You've been listening to a news event featuring the four organizations that you've heard from today, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, the Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Coalition, the SEED Coalition, Friends of the Earth in South Carolina, and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. More information is available to you on the web at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy at www.cleanenergy.org. A streaming audio replay of this news event will be available there later on today as of 5 or 6 o'clock Eastern Time. You can make arrangements after this news event is over to contact any one of the speakers that you heard from today. We especially want to encourage those reporters who indicated to the operator that they want to take your question offline to contact Leslie Anderson after the news event is over. She's at 703-276-3256. Again, that's Leslie Anderson at 703-276-3256. Again, you've been listening to a news event that featured the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, the Sustainable Energy and Economic Development Seed Coalition, Friends of the Earth in South Carolina, and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. On behalf of those four organizations, we'd like to thank you for joining us today. That concludes this news event.